Business Matters, brought to you by the University of Bedfordshire Business School in partnership with Radiolab.
Very lucky again to have Joe here recording us for Radiolab for subsequent transmission, and I think we might be audio booming soon, I hear from the powers that be.
Whatever that means.
So today we're talking about personality clashes and how they can possibly damage or indeed enhance business and businesses. And we're really, really lucky today to have Judy Oliver with us, Managing Director of Clarity 4D. She's been doing some work with some of our third year students anyway over the last week or two, which has been very interesting. And we're going to expand the discussion into a more general thing about business and personality. So Judy, I think initially if you maybe just give us a quick run through of your sort of career to date and so on, and how you ended up doing what you're doing now.
Yes, thank you very much. Well, thank you for inviting me. My first job was way back, I won't tell you when, but actually was at the University of London, University of London. I've always been interested in education and things. I was an administrator, and then I had babies, and I started working with a company that sold clothes, party plan, a bit like Tupperware and that sort of thing. So I didn't know, I just wanted to have a bit of my own money, and I just didn't know what to do, but I seemed to be quite successful at it until I ended up being national sales manager, running a team of 500 ladies over the south of England. And then the company went down the drain, so I had to find something else, and I really enjoyed the training aspect of that. I had no training myself. I seemed to have a natural gift for selling and training other people. So I then became a trainer with Dale Carnegie Training, How to Win Friends and Influence People. And I learned my craft there until beginning of this century, you say it like that, beginning of this century, 2000, I started my own business using what I'd learned through my experience in selling and Dale Carnegie Training. And I started the business called You Unlimited and helped people develop through coaching and management. But one of the things I recognised was that the Dale Carnegie experience in particular was a really good training, but they didn't take account of the individual. I was curious to notice introverts used to drop out quite early on because they were being pushed into doing things that were way out of their comfort zone. And then I came across something that I thought was interesting, which is what I developed into Clarity 4D in 2008. The discussion today, personality clashes can damage business. I had my aha moment about this in probably 2002, but I was at a networking event run by the Chamber of Commerce here in Luton, and I was doing what I thought had to be done to meet people and promote Dale Carnegie, and I was being me. Clarity 4D uses colours. So my analogy of me is that I'm yellow, which is extroverted, friendly, sociable, chatty, expressive, quite flamboyant. And I was being me and chatting to an accountant who probably was psychologically opposite me in terms of he was analytical, formal, quite reserved, and quite introverted, thinking, and his colour, in retrospect, was probably blue, water, calm, deep, and, you know, reflective. But I didn't know anything of this stuff at the time, and I was just chatting away to him, thinking I was doing a good job promoting Dale Carnegie. And then I had to phone him up, and I rang up, and I didn't say my name. I just said, oh, would you be interested in coming to a seminar with Dale Carnegie and Business Link to find out more about, you know, leadership and management? And he said, yes, I would be interested in finding out more. Could you send somebody to tell me more about it? But don't send that awful pushy woman from Dale Carnegie. And I said, oh, no, we won't send her. Good gracious, we'll send somebody else. And I put the phone down and I thought, me? I'm not pushy. I'm, you know, I'm all these lovely, sociable and friendly people and, you know, like chatting. And it wasn't until some time afterwards that suddenly I realised that I was being far too in your face, if you like, for him. He wasn't comfortable. And then I suddenly thought, how many other people have been put off by me being too full on?
Yeah, it's interesting. In my early days at Tesco, I was on some sort of management development course, and I think we had to do some role playing. And one of the specific pieces of feedback I got, which I still remember now, was, "Stephen, you don't smile at all. You're not smiling at me. You look so miserable." That was a really good point that, you know, I've retained for whatever it is, 20, 30 years or something. And then the other thing, which I got feedback I got only a few years ago, I only really picked up a few years ago. I can't remember specifically who it was. It wasn't actually a business situation. It was a sort of a friend or whatever. It's so scary, quite intimidated. And you do need people to tell you things, because it is very, very difficult to know how you come over to other people. And once you're aware of that, then you can maybe adapt in certain ways to make them feel more comfortable.
Yeah.
And I suppose one of the other thing which you were saying with this accountant, I don't really recognise the character of that accountant at all, but that he was very reserved and analytical, etc. is that the very fact that you recognise his personality traits and his characteristics, I suppose by seeing them now, you would adapt your behaviour accordingly.
Absolutely.
But I mean.
Well, yes, exactly. I mean, I didn't know at the time. I didn't understand this at the time. And then when I did learn about this, it made sense to me. And funnily enough, I mean, I've met him many, many times over the years. In fact, we were on the board of the Chamber of Commerce together at one stage. I hope he's not listening to this. But I did. I adapted my style when I met him, because I could recognise that I needed to just calm down, slow down a little bit my speech, give him more time to reflect rather than gabbling on. So you can do it very easily without necessarily changing your personality, but you can adapt to meet the style of the other person when you become more aware of who you are and who you're talking to. It's a great asset, I think, in business. You can really get people, build rapport quickly if you're in a sales situation, or you can get teams working more together when they recognise that they've all got strengths, but sometimes they don't value the strengths of other people. They find them frustrating, but we need them.
You're Luton.
Your music.
Radio Lab, 97.1 FM.
Just before we sort of kicked off the session, we picked out four in the room here, and we did a very quick sort of personality analysis, which I think was quite interesting. And you actually said, just obviously by luck, because it wasn't planned, that we'd ended up with quite a sort of potentially well-balanced team to move forward with.
So my company is called Clarity 4D. And the reason for that is that, first of all, we have clarity on who we are. And the 4D stands for your levels of development. So the first dimension is who do you think you are? How do you see yourself? And so we produce profiles, which you answer 10 questions and you get a profile back that gives you a lot of information about yourself. And that's how you see yourself, because you answer the questionnaire. So in theory, you should find the profile very accurate. The second dimension is in the more interesting part, which is when you share your profile with other people and get the feedback. Feedback is really how we learn. And if you share it with people who are not like you, you can read other people's profiles and get a greater understanding of them. And they also get a better insight of you. So that's the second dimension. The third dimension is, what is your hidden potential? So we have, as a team, we've just identified that we've got our strengths. The things that we're not quite so good at, that's our potential. We could be, for instance, I have very little blue, which is the analytical. That's why I found my accountant a bit of a challenge. I have very little blue in my preferred profile. But that gives me the potential to develop that if I choose to do so. The fourth dimension is if you do choose to do something about it, it's not going to happen overnight. You need to be consciously working at it, looking for people you're talking to, adapting your style until you become confident and it becomes second nature. So in the room, we had the four people we looked at. We had one gentleman who's got yellow and red, which is similar to me. Mine's more red-yellow, probably. And then we had a young lady who's been looking at HR, and her two colours were yellow and green. Green is earth and supportive and caring. Yellow is the sunshine and sociable bit. We had another gentleman who had red, which is fire and action and knowing what they want. And second colour was blue, which is the thinking and cautious. So that is the red and blue together, double whammy of thinking preference, making decisions from the head. We're two extroverts, can get out there, make things happen. And then we had the young lady with the green and yellow who makes decisions from the heart. And then we also had Joe, who is the sound engineer, who had blue as the second colour, but yellow as the first. So quite an interesting combination there. But all those five colours together, those individuals, gives a good spread of what a team needs. Because if you have everybody the same, you can get a rather one-sided team. People tend to employ people with a certain qualities, which doesn't add value to the organisation in terms of diversity. Yeah. What I'm talking about here, we've all heard about that Thomas Cook case. Did you hear about the Thomas Cook who has been fined? A report come out about their actions after the death of two children in a holiday rental place that they were very reprimanded and castigated all over the news, this Thomas Cook, because they had made the decisions of acting as they did from a legal and financial point of view, which to me says they were using their head. You know, it was a thinking thing. What's the impact on the business? We've got to, mitigate the costs and everything. And they didn't take any account of the feelings of the children's parents. They didn't even write to them, I don't think, for several months. It all came out in the report. So there was no feeling, no thinking about the impact on their clients and anything, on people, basically. And look at the damage. They probably will lose customers who say, I'm not going to go for a company like that. They're just single-minded about money and what they can get out of it. And I think a lot of companies are coming around now to the view that they need to be much more focused on the thoughts and concerns of their customers.
This is Radio Lab.
Your Luton, your music.
You can have two sort of quite different personalities, personality types, but both can be very successful. So in my early days at Tesco, I used to go around sort of meeting store managers, and these are store managers who've got quite a substantial business on their own with about, say, 200, 250 employees in each unit. And what I had in my head as a stereotype character for a successful store manager would be a very yellow and red, I guess, sort of outgoing, very intuitive, very energetic individual, typical sort of street trader, if you like, would be on it. And sure enough, there were plenty of those, but there were equally successful store managers who were very introverted, very quiet, quite deep thinking, not necessarily sort of deep intellectuals, but deep thinking, quite intense individuals, who would run their operation in a very different way, but again, get good results. And I guess, thinking about it more now, a lot of that's probably down to the teams immediately below them, to the the top level team in the store, the person running the butchery or running the fruit and veg team, or out in the back room or running the checkouts and all that sort of thing, having a good blend. And that was quite interesting. And also at the top at Tesco, when I first joined, it was run by a guy called Ian McLaurin, who's a very outgoing, very intuitive retailer. And he was then succeeded by a completely different type of individual, Terry Leahy, who is very intense, very deep thinking.
What colour?
Quite introverted, very different colour.
Blue-green?
Blue, yeah, I'm not so sure about the green, but...
Blue-red, maybe, blue-red.
Blue-red, but yeah, certainly a very determined individual. You know, came over very, very differently. And again, both of them were very successful in their own ways. So just taking it forward a bit of a dichotomy in my head, which says, I am what I am. This is me. For better or for worse, that's my personality. And should I not be happy with my personality and satisfied with it? Or should I be looking to change it to fit in whatever situation I'm in? Have I got to put on an act? Am I doing a little bit of play acting here to fit to a circumstance? And I think we all probably recognise that we do a bit of play acting depending on what situation you're in. But I wonder what thoughts you had about, you know, if your personality is like it is now, if I looked at my personality in 5 years' time or in 10 years' time, in reality, would it be different?
Okay. Should it be different? I don't know whether it will be different. I think there's a certain amount of experience and confidence that help people in some ways. But profiling is all based on the work of Carl Jung, who was a psychologist who died in 1961. And he identified preferred ways of behaving. And so the preferred ways are pretty set. So if you are somebody who is quite extroverted, you're unlikely to suddenly become a hermit, or likewise, if you are somebody who's quite introverted, you're unlikely to enjoy being the centre of attention and mixing with people. But there will be degrees of variation. And I've just done worked with a company recently that was interesting. I profiled the one gentleman who in 2008, when he was just a salesperson, and he had quite a lot, he had a lot of green energy and not much red. And then he came on a course because he was identified to be for leadership, going further in the company. He came on my leadership program, and at the 2012 we profiled him again, and he was still quite strongly green, but his red energy had come up because he was taking more responsibility. And I ran a course with, now he's the general manager of the company, and I did a work with his team a couple of weeks ago, and he has got still green as his first colour, but his red is second. He's got that wonderful ability to do both the green and the red quite naturally. I still see that he's got the green as his preferred style, so he can do it, and he's developed that because he wanted to. If you don't want to, then don't bother, you know, but you may go through life and miss an awful lot of good relationships because you haven't engaged with other people.
Radio Lab, 97.1 FM.
That was quite interesting, because with that chap, you don't think he was just adapting his answers to what he thought they should be?
I don't think he would have been promoted to general manager if he hadn't have developed his red. Shall I put it like that?
Yeah.
Because the qualities of red energy, of decision making, focus, strategy, and if he had stayed just with his very low red, which he had in 2008, he wouldn't have made it.
It's about behaviour style, because maybe his, you know, part of you, if you like, then like you said, he's still very, was it green?
Green, yeah, he's green.
But he's adapting his style.
He's learned him. Strengths of red. He's learned the strengths of red, not found them fearful, because very often if you have a preference for green, you might think, those people with red energy, they're very aggressive, they're very domineering, and I don't want to be like that. But of course we need people who are assertive and got, you know, action and focus. We need people in the teams, otherwise you're just going to have a stagnant team. But however, if you say, I don't want to be like that, and I hear that actually in organisations which have a green culture, you think of a private hospital I've just been recently working with. They have a lot of nurses, lovely, lovely, caring, green energy, but there's no direction, there's no focus of what we're going to do with this business, how we're going to attract new contracts, etc. They're all doing what they're good at, the green stuff. So this gentleman we're talking about, I think, had recognised that if he wanted to go further in his career, he shouldn't be fearful of engaging in the strengths of the red energy. And I think when you've got that ability to do your opposite colour almost as equally well as your first preference, that's a great gift. I've got another little anecdote about green and yellow, which is a damaging one. It's a precautionary tale. If you think, I'll talk about why, if you don't understand this stuff, it can damage your business. Think of the cost of disciplinary grievance hearings. I don't know how much. Has anybody been involved? Anybody? This is an HR sort of issue.
Actually, I've got somebody coming in a few weeks' time from ACAS to do a business matters session on that. But have you...
Any ideas?
Several people here from the HR, on the HR courses. Have you covered anything on... Yeah. Just a little bit.
It could be a legally costly time,
yeah.
And time, yeah. The time you have to put into. So this situation was with one of the public sector organisations of emergency services. I won't be too specific. The PA, the secretary of the chief of this organisation, was going to take out a grievance against him because she had a lot of green energy and he had a lot of red energy, and her perception was that he was bullying her. And so I was asked to come in, and they both did their profiles, and it was very evident to me, you know, very high red, the boss, very high green of the PA. And so, you know, if it had gone to the grievance and to the disciplinary, his position would have been damaged. His career maybe even halted, and the cost to the organisation would have been huge. All the publicity, you know, that would have been awful. So sat down with the PA lady and said, well, actually what you're seeing as being bullying is not necessarily the truth. It's just not, you don't like that style of being talked to, because he's talking at you perhaps and being too direct, etc., etc., and you feel you're being pushed, and etc. So when we had a little chat, she did begin to see that he wasn't doing it intentionally. It wasn't intentional bullying, it was his style. And then I had a chat with him, and he was horrified, absolutely horrified to think that he could have been called a bully, because he said, I just speak my mind, you know, and I just, say it as it is. And you know, that's how we have to be in this organisation. And I say, yeah, I'm sure you do, but, you know, if talking to somebody who's so different to you, just see if you could modify it and put the things that you want to do, instead of saying, right, I need that by 5 o'clock, which is a red way of saying things. If you did it in a more green way of saying, oh, I can see you're really busy, I would be really grateful if you could get that done for me by 5 o'clock. Any chance? Just see what the difference is. And luckily, she didn't take it any further. And I don't know what happened in the end, but she didn't stay much longer than another 6 months. So, but she didn't go immediately, and she didn't take it any further.
Yeah.
And he is still in situ.
And maybe it's about recognising that, you know, as we often hear about in all sorts of business and other situations, you know, sometimes people just don't get on.
You know,
that's quite often.
But you
can try and adapt, but I guess if you've got the real extreme red and the real extreme green, perhaps, then it's quite difficult to, if you like, meet in the middle.
Well, I think you can do it by just by recognising it and working hard at it. Now, there are going to be moments when you lapse, because you'll always go back into your preferred style. When you're under pressure, you're more likely to, I say not always, you're more likely to. So you will have momentary lapses. But I think if you can recognise that you've both got strengths, whatever your different colours are, and you may not like the person, you don't have to be their best friend, but you can respect and value their strengths and use them to help you make, you know, be the perfect team. And in fact, when you think about who you're living with, wherever, you know, your other half, very often they are totally opposite to you.
You're Luton.
Your music.
Radiolab 97.1 FM.
Have you got any other examples of where you've seen these personality problems actually sort of, you know, damaging a business or whatever? At board level or lower levels?
If we think of the companies who actually take on board what we're talking about, they are doing it because they can see the potential risks of not doing something about it. So, I've been in a group where somebody stormed off and, you know, so if you've got a team like that where one person just storms off and has, I can't work with that person, that is damaging, isn't it? Because you're not getting people working together, not collaborating, they're not cooperating. If they're not talking to each other, then you're going to miss communication, they're going to miss deadlines. There's going to be a high turnover of staff. But one of the biggest statistics, I believe, of why people leave their jobs, I don't know if, again, from the HR point of view, is that they don't like or don't get on with their manager. Now, if you actually add up the cost of replacing people, a middle manager, I did this exercise several years ago, so the cost has probably gone up since then, but it was over 30,000. By the time you've advertised, interviewed a number of people, the time it takes you to interview them, select the right person, maybe give them the induction training. They won't be actively contributing to your business for probably 6 months until they're settled in. So that cost to your business, just because the previous person didn't like their manager, and the manager is behaving in a way that doesn't recognise who he's got in his team or her team. He treats them all in the same way and doesn't modify his approach, and people may leave. There is one company I can think of, actually. They have a huge turnover of staff, and it's all down to one person who seems to drive them away in droves. But they haven't replaced that person. I can't understand it. You know, I would sort of say, exit interviews, why are you leaving? Well, because of that person. And you think, they may be part of the family, I don't know, but... unbelievable. Yeah. And then they're having to pay all this money to find replacements. So that, to me, is a great, you know, why this sort of thing is important.
Absolutely, absolutely. Again, certainly the times in various businesses I've been in where you have these great mixtures of personalities and personality traits, and how, certainly in my early days, when we, my early days at Tesco, it had quite a sort of bullying culture. Not quite bullying, but the reds and yellows sort of ran pretty much everything and dominated. And you could see how the more reflective individuals, who would usually have a lot to offer, got sidelined in a group. And then quite often that project would go down a particular road and go wrong. You come out and say, this person over here, this blue person over here, actually mentioned that 3 months ago.
Yeah, yeah.
That what we should have been doing is X, Y, and Z. And I can even say in my time as an accountant there, working with the marketing department, the commercial and marketing guys, they were coming up with new ideas about some particular promotion or something like that, quite a big promotion. And I would say, you would get invited into the project team as an accountant, and marketing people and accountants, as Judy knows, generally don't mix terribly well. Because I can remember, for example, saying, well, hang on, have we actually thought about how much this is going to cost in terms of VAT? You haven't put those VAT numbers into your calculations. Oh, blimey, good point. That's another 20% to the cost or something.
Mm.
You know, you need that's not a sort of thing that a marketing person will think about.
Mm.
It's that sort of detail or just thinking in a slightly different way, keeping your feet on the ground in this case, whilst all the other guys are all flying away, that can help and contribute. And I know, at all levels here, we have students doing various exercises in teams and so on, doing presentations and that sort of thing. And it's interesting in the early days how everybody has to have a go at doing the presentation, or, you know, everyone does a slide each or something like that. Some are very good presenters, some are very bad presenters. Some have got the right sort of personality for that sort of thing, or the traits to do it, and others find it quite difficult. And then a year or two later, you seem to do it, and they're so much better. And if they're either comfortable that the ones who are good do it, and the others sort of sit in the background and they've done the analysis or the research leading up to that particular presentation,
mm-hmm.
or whatever. But it's all about this knowing how you can fit best,
mm.
and then and recognising the positive sort of attributes of others.
Yeah, absolutely. And the companies who really take this on board, they may do selection from so they get the right person, the right time, first person, you know, the right person. Then they help them with their personal development, leadership qualities. They use them with appraisals, performance management. Then they look at the team and how they are collaborating, communicating together, and cross, you know, you hear about organisations working in silos,
mm-hmm.
Cross the silos, so you get a much bigger, a wider communication of the vision and values of the organisation. And then they concentrate on the stakeholders they have who are important to their business, the relationships they have with key suppliers and key clients, about succession planning. Because if you're a business that hasn't got a good relationship, well, you've only got a relationship with one person in your client customer base, and that person moves on, then you haven't got anyone. You could lose a huge amount of of your income. And likewise with suppliers, if you don't have the same sort of backup strategy. And so understanding who you're dealing with is so important, and yet businesses don't put they just think of these profiles as being a nice touchy-feely type of thing. They don't recognise actually it's making the difference between the bottom line for your company when you invest in this, because if you get it right, then you'll see difference in staff turnover, in motivated staff, getting the right quality of people doing the right jobs.
Terms of sales, as you were just saying.
Sales, yeah, customer service, all the sorts of things, anything that involves people, basically. So we're finding that, in fact, interestingly enough, that there's much more, you know, how the recession hits training and learning development. We've gone through this real trough for several years, but now, coming out of it, we're getting companies, big companies, you saying to us, we want House of Fraser. I worked with them a couple of weeks ago. John Lewis are working, a lot of people in the retail sector are using Clarity 4D. The NHS is another example of huge different types of personality. I read an article yesterday in one of the online newspapers about how the doctors and consultants very often are focusing on the medical and scientific symptoms of patients, and it's a customer's patients. And again, so this red-blue thinking about the symptoms and the diseases and everything, and they don't think about the impact on the individual who's ill or the family, because they're just so focused on on the medical side. And of course, the nurses, who are more of the green, as I say, caring, but they could be intimidated by the doctors and the hierarchy. So you get this, they're not communicating. The red blues make alienating the nurses and alienating the actual patients themselves and their families. The nurses overworked, stressed and frustrated. So you can see why there's so many different problems in the NHS. But we're actually working with them, so maybe it will solve all their problems. Yes.
All right.
If you're interested in finding one from farm, I'm happy to do that for you. If anyone in the audience wants to give me the... I'll give you my card. Be happy to do that. Yeah.
Really interesting.
Thank you
really
very much.
Interesting topic. So thanks very much.
Okay, thank you. Enjoyed it.
Good.